Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. Matt Doyle is here. David Goss is here. Our season previews coming your way on today's show. Two big nights of CONCACAF Champions Cup. Some magic for the likes of Cade Cowell and the Vancouver Whitecaps until APG ruined their party. And others in this competition, we'll go through it. The best thing we saw will come out of CONCACAF, and then we'll hit a bunch of season previews. Chicago, big signings there. Kellen Acosta, confirmed. Charlotte, moving their DPs, but maybe getting more soon. Minnesota, yeah, no, they still don't have a head coach. New York City FC, Colorado, Dallas, and DC United, rounding out our previews. What's up, guys? What are you juiced about? And if it's not hummus to RSL, I don't know what it could possibly be.
Doyle wasn't on Monday. I just assumed he was in Minnesota trying out as the new head coach for Minnesota United. So I'm a little shocked.
I would take that job. That is an attractive job because you just roll the ball to your number 10 and your number 9 puts the ball in the back of the net. I love it.
Doyle, please, I'm your agent and I'm negotiating this for you. Okay, don't be too warm openly because we got to keep some leverage.
Yeah, we got to pretend like there's other options here. Come on, there's a lot of jobs that I would take. What do you think with the hummus thing? Is that completely made up?
It feels completely made up. I don't buy the Columbus part. The RSL part maybe is a little bit more plausible, but still doesn't seem super plausible. I just still think back to 2020 when Miami was launching and Hummus was available. He would have been like the perfect guy to start that team with almost half a decade ago now. But it does feel like the time has passed, right? The book is closed on Hummus as a legitimate MLS target.
So I'm going to tell you where this lore comes from, or at least I'm guessing. I saw Graham reporting, as always, on top of things, that Sebastian Velasquez was back in Colombia this offseason. He played at James Rodriguez's house. They had a big pickup game. He tweeted about talking to James Rodriguez about coming to MLS recently. Sebastian Velasquez is our emissary into the deep protected domain of James Rodriguez, and he is bringing him to his original MLS club, Salt Lake. We can thank Sebastian Velasquez for this rumor. I truly believe that.
Just a rumor, folks. Just to be clear, this is only exactly a rumor.
Probably 100% made up. What's not made up, Dave, is that Dami is back. Demir Krylock is back. CONCACAF Champions Cup kicking off this week. The Vancouver Whitecaps, the only MLS team in action. A 1-1 draw on Vancouver Island against Tigres, a game that they could have been leading 2-0 if not for a perhaps erroneous offside call. All the joy, all the spectacular play, the game plan. Yeah, you got your rewards, but you got a 1-1. But Dami's back.
Take out your CONCACAF bingo board. This isn't bingo. This isn't I got a straight line. We hit every single spot except for the lights going out. You had alternate stadium, tough travel. You had the Liga MX team in midseason form, playing all their stars, playing poorly, surrounding the referee for multiple calls that made no sense, bringing superstars off the bench, having fresher legs at the end of the game to get an equalizer, having that superstar talent to get them over the top. You had Vancouver not being able to play one of their best players because it's preseason and he still hurt, an Andres Cubas, playing a bunch of people out of position, outplaying the Liga MX superstar team, not finishing their chances and not getting the result that was necessary. You had it all. But the biggest one, I think, for all of us that love Major League Soccer is Dami Krylock. He's been like one of the best personalities in the league over the years. He's been a fantastic player for RSL. He's had injury issues. He's been out. He hasn't been able to play the game he loves and finish his career the way he wanted. So he chooses to go to Vancouver. It seemed like, he'll get a couple minutes here or there. But this was something that they have lacked in the past, which is a guy who's willing to take the big moments. And he didn't create a ton of chances. He's not going to be a superstar for this team, but Brian White heads that ball along from 30 yards out and Dami Krylock's on the end of it. He knows what to do with it and put it away. So it was cool to see him score the goal. It was really fun to watch the way Vancouver played for 65 or so minutes. It was like a warm blanket being back in CONCACAF once again.
I'll make two points on that, Weeby, real quick.
Go ahead, man.
Right now on the depth chart, I have Krylock as Brian White's backup. I didn't expect him to play as a midfielder heading into the season. So when the starting lineup was announced, I wasn't sure how it was going to play out, but he was dropping deep. Like, he was much more of a midfielder than a pure attacker in this one. But even when he is playing in the midfield, that run that he makes drifting to the back post, like, it's Wondolowski-esque in his ability to lose his defenders and just pick the exact right moment to find open spaces. It's a brilliant bit of soccer. He's a lot of fun to watch. I hope he stays healthy, because he's been so much fun to watch since he came into the league. That was 6 years ago now. The other thing is that, look, the Tigres were always going to be favorites to win this series. They're probably, you know, play it 20 times, they probably win 18 of them. Vancouver gave themselves a real shot. And I thought, yeah, the final 25 minutes, their legs weren't there. But also the VAR call on the Brian White goal, I think that took something out of them a little bit as well. It was tough but predictable to watch.
I have to say, the header from Brian White was absolutely magnificently massaged into the path of Demir Krylock.
Yeah, no one puts better texture on a header down the middle of the field as a through ball than Brian White. That's what he's known for.
Onto the foot, bro. Onto the foot. It's a through ball with his head, and then Demir Krylock does what Demir does. And it's in those moments, like you said, Dave, when it gets big, where it seems like he slows down, understands the footwork, the touch. It doesn't have to be smashed. It just has to trickle underneath the goalkeeper. And unfortunately, yeah, heart's broken. But a new role for Pedro Vite, Doyle. Vinny Sartini talking afterwards, like, this dude's a midfielder. We think he's can be a very good midfielder, not necessarily just a number 10.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him getting all over the ball in this one, dropping deep and sort of organizing. And that's always been in his bag. And I think that what hasn't necessarily been has been sort of the mindset to say, okay, I'm going to run the show here. And over the past month in CONMEBOL U23 Olympic qualifying, Vite was literally one of the best players in the entire region. Like, he was awesome for Ecuador in those games, playing that role where he was sort of running the show. I'm not sure we're going to see him in this role all that much for Vancouver this year, but it's good. A, it's good to know that he can do it. And B, I thought when he did get forward, he was more assertive, more incisive than he has tended to be in the past. Like, he has been just a good piece for the Vancouver Whitecaps over the past couple of years. He has the talent to be a centerpiece. And I think that what we saw through 65, 70 minutes in this one was him sort of taking a step toward that. I'm not going to say he took his chance entirely, but like, he did seem more assertive and he did seem more like, okay, this is my team. I'm going to, you know, obviously it's Ryan Gauld's team and it's Brian White's team and it's Andres Cubos' team as well. But like, I'm there with that group. I'm just as important as these guys are. And that is the result ended up being disappointing, but I think the overall performance has to be considered encouraging for the Whitecaps because of what they got from Pedro Vite and because what that bodes for them going over the course of this season and into 2025 as well. Like, he's an answer long-term in a spot where MLS teams are always looking for answers.
Do you think this is what the Caps look like in MLS? The way they played against Tigres, where very organized, sat back, waiting for opportunities to counter. And then once they're downhill, very quick, just maybe not clean enough in those high leverage spots. You know, the Krylock chance that he's a step away from. The other opportunities, they just can't quite get out of their own way, or Shop doesn't have the right idea, or he runs into Raposo at the back post to prevent a volley. Like, is this the style of play that you think Vanny's going to bring to MLS, or is this Tigres because it's Tigres?
It's Tigres because it's Tigres. I think there are times where the Caps will pack it in and say, all right, you know, we're going to absorb because I think this gives us a better chance to get 3 points out of this game. But I still think Vinny Sartini, what we've seen over the past 2 years with him as head coach. Like, he wants his team to be the protagonists. He wants his team to be the ones with the ball more often than not, sort of dictating the game. And I don't think that's going to change, but it was good to see them play against the ball as effectively as I think they did in this one.
Yeah, just don't foul around the 18 when APG is out there and you're up one goal late on in a CONCACAF Champions Cup game. Got to shout out Vancouver Island and Starlight Stadium. Dave, you gave us the little hint that this was going to be special, and I've seen the photos, of course, over the years as Pacific has played games or had big moments in the Canadian Championship, but beautiful stadium, wonderful night, looked like it was popping, huge Tigres fan group. It was just one of those CONCACAF games that you're like, man, I wish I was there. I wish I was in the Pacific Northwest. I wish I took the ferry over to be at this moment. That was one of the best things I saw, no doubt.
And former Pacific forward Taryn Campbell scored against Chivas. So it was a big day for Pacific without doing anything.
Speaking of Chivas, Cade Cowell had a big night. Finally got on the score sheet, two goals, had assists as well in a 3-1 win against Forge. That's the best thing I saw. The blonde locks, the curls, the left-footed finishes, the patience with the runs. Like, that was the thing that impressed me the most from Cade in this game, was just the moments where it's like, yeah, in MLS, he probably runs into an offside position there and just runs him out of the play. Or he doesn't quite time that run the way he wants to. And once he's there, doesn't have the sort of like train of thought to make the decision fast enough to make a difference. And in this game, both goals he scored, it's like patient runs, use his burst. We know he has that high end speed. And once he got on the ball in good spots, great service as well, he was calm. He was confident. And that's what we begged for in San Jose for so long. Cool. Everybody else is hyped. Just jacked up for Cade Cowell.
So.
Whoa, haters ball for Cade Cowell in here.
Listen, scoring goals better than not scoring goals. I would say I don't think this is – it wouldn't shock me if this wasn't the first time that we saw a player play well in a competition when they get to a new team that's maybe still at their level without then seeing it
at
a different level. So I'll just say, like, listen, there are rumors. There are rumors, not – 100% that like Halifax and Cavalry were looking at Cade Cowell. I think he'd make a difference on those teams. I'm sure of that. I think he can make a difference in Liga MX as well. I'm not as sure.
Wow. Player haters ball going on right now in extra time. Cade, I love you. Monterrey 4-1 win over Comunicaciones. Reales de Lee.
Let's
their
go.
First win in like 30 games. And they do it against Club America 2-1. In Nicaragua. That one looked like another one of those Pantheon moments within CONCACAF. Congratulations, Reales de Lee. Big mountain to climb going back to Mexico City, but a great moment for that club. Toluca winners, no surprise there, against Herediano. And then we're waiting now a few weeks for the rest of the competition to get going. All right, transfer roundup sponsored by Tommy Scoops. This time, it's Luis Muriel that we're talking about for Orlando City. It's still Duncan Maguire that we're talking about because nothing has been resolved regarding his transfer to Blackburn. Will the powers that be allow it, or will they say, no, you didn't hit the submit button, so it's not going through? We don't know. Muriel, Doyle, what do you think about that for Orlando City? Reportedly a couple million euros to get him over now and a deal 2+1, 2 years guaranteed, 1 year option.
He's been so good for Atalanta over the past 5 years. One of the defining players of a very unprecedentedly great run for that team. And what's been great about Muriel in particular is he could play as a nine, but he could drop in and play as a playmaker while he's being a nine. He really does well in terms of linking the wingers into the attack, which is something that's really important for this Orlando City team. I don't think he plays with Duncan Maguire. I do think it would be a one or the other situation for Orlando City if they're both there. And like, that's the kind of depth that you want if you're going to try to make a run at winning CONCACAF Champions Cup, winning the Shield, winning everything you play for. It doesn't maybe bode all that well for Duncan Maguire's transfer market value or transfer value when the summer window opens, assuming that the Blackburn thing does not get approved, because I'm not sure that Maguire would start over Muriel right now. He'll definitely play, like there'll definitely be minutes, but like Muriel is the type of guy, just 32, right? This is not like a 36-year-old coming over for his final cup of coffee. He still has thousands of good minutes of soccer in those legs of his, and we've seen him do it at close to the highest level in the game.
So I agree with you, Doyle. I would say I think in the end, by the time Duncan Maguire leaves, that's when Muriel's going to be playing. He's only started two games for Atalanta this year. We see how long it takes players to come over. You know, I think with you talked about all the competitions they're going to play in, like, I agree with you. This doesn't make sense together. It's not ideal. But I think if it goes the way we think, which is Duncan Maguire's gone in June, mm-hmm. then it'll end up working out for Orlando, where they can lean on him early. They can rotate the two of them throughout. If someone else gets hurt, they could try and change up their shape a little once off. They have that option at least to do it. And as you said, Muriel can do a little bit more than just be a target number nine to play alongside a guy like that. I don't think this is like the long-term build of Orlando's. Like, these two guys are a centerpiece that we're built around. I think it'll be fine over the course of the next few months.
Yeah, it's the timing got screwed up. It was perfect.
Yeah.
Right? It was perfect. It was all set up perfect. Duncan was going to go get his opportunity. He was going to get paid. Clearly, Orlando had this in the hopper, and we're sort of waiting for dominoes to fall. And then the dominoes just sat.
Yeah.
So
someone clicked save.
It's I don't know what to say about that entire situation anymore other than, hey, I feel bad for Duncan Maguire, and it's sort of like watching in horror as the whole thing unfolds. But there is a resolution that could make it okay for everybody. We'll see what's decided in England about Duncan Maguire's fate with Blackburn. Okay, season previews. 7 minutes, but we're going to cheat on the first one because it's Chicago Fire. 40 points last year. That's a plus one in the point category. 13th in the East. Of course, no playoffs. That's 5 years in a row without the playoffs for the Chicago Fire. They haven't been better than 17th in the Supporters' Shield in that time. They have two playoff appearances in 13 seasons. It's dire, but this offseason has brought hope. So here is your haiku. Finally, there's smoke, a spark to restart the fire, long since extinguished. I think I could have delivered the last two lines a little bit better, but I liked that one. I really did. Who are the two playoff teams in this team's 13-year recent history?
2017.
Yep, that was the easy one.
And
that's Pano, that's Nikolic, that's Basti and Dax, and a record-setting Fire team. I think they finished third in the East that year.
And the other one was it 2012? It was the year before it was the year before McGee came. Right, McGee came in 2013, won MVP, but they fell short of the playoffs. Yeah.
It's like, this is like we're talking Patrick Diarko years, right?
Yeah,
I think so. Yes, that's correct. We are.
Who was it 11 or 12?
It was 12. Who was the coach at that time?
Dennis Hamlett.
I'm going to say Frank Klopas.
Frank Klopas was the coach at that time. So, you know, time is a circle and we're back.
Circle, yeah.
Yeah. We have Patrick Diarko. Who's the leading scorer for that team with 8 goals?
Ariel Graziani.
Well, that's a great guess. I had Graziani in my trivia.
Juan Luis Anangano?
No. Good guess. Chris Rolfe, 8 goals. Marco Papa, second leading scorer on this team. Arne Friedrich and Austin Berry were your center back pairing. Pavel Pardo was in the team as well. And Sergio McDonald got a couple goals and a couple assists as that Fire team snuck into the playoffs and immediately lost. Those are the only two playoff teams they have in 13 seasons. 5 straight years. Basically in the back half of the league for 5 straight years, haven't even been in the top half of the Shield standings or even close to it. That's crazy. So this offseason, some big changes. Hugo Kuipers, the record transfer from Gent, comes in as the forward. Kellen Acosta is the big news of the moment. Midfielder pictured at their preseason scrimmage, then immediately announced as a free agent signing. Andrew Gutman is back to Chicago. He was very happy about that trade from Colorado. Tom Barlow was in from the Red Bulls. Tobias Salquist is over from Silkeborg in Denmark, I believe. And Alan Aragoni is on loan from Lugano. It is a huge offseason. It is not yet done. There are rumors that Jairo Torres and Gaston Jimenez and Kasper Schabilko and Arno Saquet, those guys are all trying to leave. Osman Dumbia was also sent packing, the DP that was on loan. Miguel Navarro was traded and Kai Kamara was not re-signed. Tell me about the Kellen Acosta signing, Dave. You like this for club? What about for player?
Yeah, I think I like it for both. Obviously, for the Chicago Fire, like, we know Kellen Acosta can play at a high level. Started and won an MLS Cup 2 years ago. Has been a consistent player on some of the better teams in MLS when you go back to what the Colorado Rapids did when he was in that group and what FC Dallas did when he was in that group borderline national team player right now as well. So I think him choosing to come is big, because that's kind of been one of the issues with Kellen over the last few years, is he's kind of been traded and then keeps talking about, oh, I didn't want to be here, I wanted to be somewhere else. So it's his option now. He's versatile. He can cover some ground. You can play through him a little bit. I think you have a little bit more grit in midfield than what the other guys you've had have offered, especially in Gaston Jimenez, but he's also versatile. So he can play with a few different partners where maybe it's Navarro full-time, maybe it's Jimenez full-time, or maybe there's still more work for Chicago Fire to do over the course of time. His set-piece delivery has been elite at times in MLS over the last few years. That gives you another option as well. And you bring someone in who's a known quantity. When you talk about the Fire over the last 10 years and you talk about the lack of playoffs, it hasn't been a lack of investment, but it's been investment on complete unknowns, either young or very old players coming from overseas that don't know MLS, all coming in together, trying to figure it out at the same time with a lack of a clear vision. Kellen Acosta is none of those things. So it's a really nice move, I think, for them. And for Kellen, he needs to play a ton of minutes. He didn't last year with LAFC, maybe as much as we expected. He needs to play a ton of minutes. He needs to prove what he can do, whether it's as the D-mid or as the eight, to try and break into the national team a little bit more. And this could be his spot where he sort of puts his name down as one of the core pieces of a team.
Still work to do in the transfer window. As I said, I don't think they're roster compliant as of today, meaning that they have more players than the roster spots they're allocated can actually fit. So there have to be some moves that happen between now and roster compliance day before the season starts. But looking at the roster, Doyle, we know who's going to stay for sure. This is your coach's corner. How does Frank Klopas set up this team?
I think it's going to be a 4-2-3-1. And I assume that they're going to be kind of a mid block or maybe even a deep block and run into space. And part of that is just like, that's the way Frank Klopas has had his team play for as long as he's been an MLS manager. But the other part is it's easier to create chances in transition. And the Fire do not really have an A-tier chance creator. We haven't seen that from Shaqiri yet. And while I really like Brian Gutierrez, I think he's more of a secondary playmaker rather than a run your offense through him type of guy. The one exception to that is when he's out on the run, he's maybe a better passer when he's at full flight than he is when he's standing still. So I expect it to be a low block, and I expect a lot of running into space, but we're also not done with the moves yet. Jairo Torres being the big one. If they can move off of him and bring in an A-tier chance creator, either on that left wing or as a number 10, the Fire will have had as good an offseason as anybody in the league. And the thing to bear in mind here is that the ownership, Joe Mansueto, look, he has not hesitated to spend money. So if they, you know, if they see their version of Thiago Almada out there, they will probably go out and try to make that move. But there haven't been any names bandied about yet. That, you know, there's not a target that we know of. But if I were a Fire fan, I'd be much more encouraged heading into this season than any of the past, I don't know, 15.
George Heights has been getting some compliments online, which is a change in sentiment from Fire fans of late, and understandably so, given that playoff pass. Now, Shaqiri is part of the playoff past, Dave, and we're talking about a DP or a primary chance creator to come. No names there. Well, we know Shaqiri's name. He's been the highest paid player in the league. So how do you get the most out of that? And it feels like Groundhog Day, because how many times have we asked that question?
Yeah, I think if I had that answer, I would leave Doyle as an agent and I'd be the head coach of the Chicago Fire. And, you know, some of it feels like personality and when he wants to show up and how hard he wants to work and where he wants to fit in. And a lot of it is like there's not a lot of work off the ball. And when you see that, it's against the ball, but it's also like preemptive to be ready when they win the ball back, being in the area you want to be for the counterattack. I think there's been flashes when he's played out on the wing or when he's played with Gutierrez in a way where he can go out wide and Gutierrez can come inside and he has a little bit more space to operate. And everyone we've seen, and Kuipers, I think, fits into this role that Chicago's put up top, normally is a pretty big target forward that you can find on the far post for knockdowns or try and put in dangerous service for them to get chances on goal. So it feels like that's your easiest path forward of like getting something out of Shakir. And I think that's why Doyle talks about bringing in a number 10 to slide Shakiri out wide full time and not have him be the guy that you play through and you go through. He's still at times an elite passer going forward. He attempts a ton of progressive passes as well. But he hasn't been someone who's taken players out of the game 1v1 as much as we thought. And his shooting from distance hasn't been as big a threat as maybe I thought it would be coming into the league, which is one of the things he did great in Europe, which gives you more space. It makes the game easier for other players because you have to extend your defense a little bit more outside of that final third area. So I don't have the answer for you. I think it's fair for the Chicago Fire to believe that if they make the right moves, it could work because of how talented he is and how his career has gone. But it has been a really long time since that talent has shown consistently week to week. He does it with the national team. That's five times a year. That's big tournaments. That's big moments. He's done it off the bench for some big teams like Liverpool and Bayern. Stokes, like the one example of him doing it consistently week in and week out. And at that point, that's a while ago.
Now, I understand if you want to play him at right wing and protect him with a more conservative right back, because you have Andrew Gutman on the left. And that maybe is where you see Guti play more of a left wing position that sort of molds into a second forward, a slasher, a runner ahead of a number 10. But man, there's a lot of dominoes. Like, moving Jairo Torres is going to be challenging enough. Then replacing him, it's a lot of work for this front office to do. Now, they've done the work so far in this window, so we'll pay close attention to what they're up to. Most interesting player to watch, I'm going to throw Chris Brady out there. There is a history, obviously, in Chicago of developing young players and selling them for a lot of money. And as of late, the goalkeeper position has been one of those spots, and Brady seems to have the same sort of talent. So another year between the pipes for Chris Brady. And Andrew Gutman going back home. That's another one that I'll be sort of locked into. Seems like that's where he wanted to be. And the Fire need more players that want to be there in that same Kellen Acosta vein as well. How about this? Over-under for Kuipers, Doyle. 14.5 goals. We debated this. Is it too high? Is that expectation too big? But then again, it's a transfer record. It's up to perhaps like $15 million. What else are you expecting if you're paying $15 million other than elite production?
Yeah, I mean, you're expecting 15 to 20 goals, right? And you're hoping for the type of impact that Giakoumakis made last year with Atlanta. The difference is Giakoumakis was playing again in front of one of the best chance creators in the league, and we just listed off all the reasons why Chicago aren't like that. So as of right now, I'll take under. 14.5 goals, I think he's more likely to hit like 12 or 13 than he is 15 or above. If they get a chance creator, then that changes.
Dave, over under?
I think I'll agree with Doyle. The potential's there, the profile fits, but as Doyle just described, Giakoumakis, who came in, and I think Giakoumakis would still have scored a lot of goals if he wasn't with Almada. The way he plays, it reminds you to me of Joseph, of like, he's hungry for chances. He gets on the end of 50-50s. They become 60-40s with him. Kuipers could be all of those things. Gutman can give you a ton of, you know, attack down the left, whether it's as a wingback or as a fullback. There's some pieces there, but the assumption being he's going to come into the league, hit the ground running, and do so in front of a worse attack at a higher level, I think is pretty tough to take.
All right, this is fine meme. What's the... What starts the fire? Why is it burning around them? I mean, I think it's pretty simple. You look at the numbers last year. They just didn't create chances. And when they didn't create chances, they obviously didn't score a goal. The production from the forwards was pretty dire, especially from midseason on. And Kuipers walks into a team that still doesn't know how exactly they want to create chances. And then they lose some games. And the culture that they've developed over the past 13, 15, whatever you want to say, last five, fill in the blank years, sucks them back down the vortex. I mean, it's the same vortex that has been pulling them down year over year over year.
But MLS is back, Fire fans. Get excited.
I know. It's just when you keep...
I mean, on paper, this is the best the Fire have looked since 2017, at least. And they are, I mean, I'll say it, they're one piece away from being one of the most interesting teams in the league. But it's the Fire, so you kind of expect things to go wrong.
All right, doom and gloom. Just give me a little bit of hope, Dave, a little bit of hope. Why could it be their year, and what would their year be?
Their year, I think, would be pushing for a home playoff game. and it would be the center back hits. And now you look at a team with Kellen Acosta in there, new center back in front of Chris Brady after a year that is super solid at the back. And it gives a platform for the attack to find their feet. They make the number 10 move like Doyle talked about. And Brian Gutierrez now as a non-main option is playing at an all-time high. Cooper is hits. He's putting away chances that you create for him. And Shaqiri can find his feet because you've got other focus for defenders besides him. So as Doyle said, they're one piece away. And even if they don't make that piece, if a lot of this hits, especially along the back six or seven, they could be good. They will be good enough to contend for a playoff spot because they did it last year and they had to go through a coaching change and a bunch of other moves and all that type of stuff.
Avoiding the wild card game to me and making the playoffs, that's a clear success. Like the bar doesn't have to be that high. It probably should be higher given some of the spend. But at this point, the Fire are just trying to find their way back, restart what was a promising project that has, just dissipated in the last 15 years. Charlotte FC, 43 points, same number they had in 2023 and 2022, ninth in the East, second straight year for that. But the playoffs changed, so they made it to the playoffs where they lost to the Red Bulls, in the wild card. Dean Smith replaced Christian Latanzio and led to this haiku: new year, same Charlotte, here today, gone tomorrow. How will Dino fare? Turnover is the way of this club. Whether it be managers now in the designated player category, they have just turned things over and they're back to a new start with Dean Smith. Key transfers in. Dean Smith, probably the biggest one. Two new DPs. He says those are coming because on the outside, Karol Swiderski and Kamil Jóźwiak are gone. The only real big signing we've seen that's done is David Bingham, and we can debate how big that actually is. It's basically a backup goalkeeper. There's a rumor about a new D-mid center back from Ligue 2, Jabril Diani. That would seem like a need to be filled. And then, it's two DPs and some rotational pieces in Justin Miram, Derek Jones, and Vinicius Melo that are out for this team. How will they play? Doyle, what is the Dean Smith way?
It's gonna be interesting to see what that is in MLS, because in England, they were a team that played against the ball quite a bit. They would get up the field and press, or they would drop deep and defend. When they got on the ball, they did not hit a huge number of long balls, which is unusual for English managers. They would actually try to keep the ball on the ground, but it wasn't like methodical ping, ping, ping possession. It was all about going vertical. And you saw that, I think, in the number 10 that they were trying to get from Bodo Glimt. Like, he's a number 10, but in a European way, not in a South American way, right? He doesn't want to get on the ball and dance a little bit and instill rhythm. He wants to get on the ball and go north-south. They weren't able to push that one across the finish line for Groenbeck. That was the name of the player. But from my understanding is they're still looking at players in that mold. So I expect it to be fast. I expect it to be very little pure midfield play. And I think that's fine. I think just having an ideology, which, to be fair, they did have under Christian Latanzio, they just didn't have the players to make it work. But having an ideology and operating towards it, and hopefully with the front office in sync with the manager's ideology, like, that's what you want. You want a team that has an idea of who they are. And the hope is that Dean Smith is the right guy to make it all work together.
Dave, who they are is still TBD. Our over-under is how many DPs will they sign before the end of this particular window? I have it at 1.5, and I'd be curious to hear what you think the profile should be for those one, maybe two DPs that this club's trying to sign.
I think the expectation should be that they're like in their prime game changers, because that was what the pitch was on Swiderski and Jóźwiak and Copetti, right? All of these guys were in their prime players who were going to be difference makers and be here for a little while. So they weren't going to the James Rodriguez route and, you know, the buyout guys, and they weren't young DPs. They weren't 20 and 21 and seeing, can we develop them and flip them? You just need to do it at a higher level, one. So there needs to be a little bit more investment, and you need to be able to do it in positions that fit. It needs to be a number 10, and it needs to be a winger. there was no, it made no sense having Swiderski and Copetti in the team at the same time, and it still doesn't. So that's what the expectations should be from fans. I'll take the under on that. I'm going to say at this point, they're going to get one done and maybe one pre-contract or whatever that comes in the summer. And I think when you look at a few of these teams, like there's maybe better options in the summer at this point. And so you can sort of take that risk. And if they can get this center mid done in Diani, they're probably strong enough with Copetti healthy to at least tread water through to the summer to stay competitive. Because last year when Privet came into the starting lineup, and then after Copetti finally got healthy, they made the playoffs halfway through the year from outside the playoff spots. So they were competitive enough for half the year to make the postseason. They could do that this year. Yeah, they'll have lost Swiderski. Jozwiak isn't really a loss, and they could be at a similar level until they get to the summer.
Wings right now would be Vargas and maybe Bender, but that would be a spot that Dean Smith has identified as a place to get a little bit more pace, a little bit more directness. As far as the number 10 goes, that would be the spot it feels to me like maybe they'll have to wait. They've got this backlog of veteran midfielders they signed last summer. Maybe if Arfield, DeGary, one of those guys has to get an opportunity to run the show a little bit, especially if you can't figure out a way to get two DP signings done during this transfer window. We'll see. That's a lot of work. Star spotlight is Enzo Copetti. Is he going to hit? You didn't really hit last year. Doyle, is he going to hit?
I mean, last year, to be fair, he had a lot of injuries and the team was a disorganized mess. So I'm willing to give him a mulligan and a Gauss theorem second look this year. But with the way the team is now, look, they got rid of the other two DPs. Their best chance creator is probably 34-year-old Scott Arfield, who's not a starter at this point. The wingers are question marks. This is not setting up to be a good start to the season for a number nine who needs service. So I think that more patience is going to be needed amongst the fan base for Enzo Copetti.
How much of a restart is this overall for Charlotte? Like, is this just is like Dean Smith comes in, he's like, yo, actually, let's just blank slate this thing.
Yeah, I think if they bring in these two DPs, I think it will be, because they don't have a lot of cornerstone players that they brought into the original team that have followed through, right? So when you look at this group and you think about, let's say they bring in two DPs, Kalina and Brant Bronico could be the only two starters that carry over from year one to now. And the depth is the same. So I think it is a total rebuild on the fly from the mistakes that were made in the expansion year. And they were competitive at times in their expansion year. But there was a lot of long-term moves that didn't make sense. Guys that were never going to break through. They gave away international spots or brought in international players and spots that didn't really make sense. And they're building out of a lot of that. So I wouldn't be shocked if it does feel like a rebuild. And they could be at the right time. Like, Crown Legacy were the top team in MLS Next Pro. They have a region in which there's top young talent that they are finally starting to tap into, and even paying transfers, I think, for some young academy players from some of the other teams. Like, they're doing a lot of the right things now that they should have been doing 3 and 4 years ago.
Who's the most interesting player for you to watch within that project, Dave?
I'm going to go back to the well for me and say Malanda, who I think I touted very highly at the start of last year, and he struggled. He struggled with the physicality of the game. He struggled with direct play against him. He struggled in some mental moments. I think he gave up a goal off a throw-in when he fell asleep early on in the season. But as I said, once Andrew Privet came into the team, Derek Jones as well playing around him at times, he started to find his feet, and you started to see what they invested in, which is the potential of an elite center back, a guy who can cover a ton of ground, who can mark attacking players in space and shift his hips pretty quickly, comfortable on the ball. And he was a lot of the bellwether for them of, like, on his good days, they were competitive, and on his bad days, they had no chance. And if those DPs are not in place and the attack is like Doyle talked about around Copetti, they're going to need to be solid at the back. And so I think if they can bring in Diani and he can be the player that he's been on his good days consistently, I think this team has a chance, as I said, to sort of tread water and stay competitive going into the summer.
This is fine meme. I'm just going to put it out there. No elite talent because they don't have it in the books right now. And then they're still soft. I mean, they were soft last year. They were open in the midfield. They were disorganized when they turned the ball over. They were one of the teams that you just bet on to blow leads. The other one was the Crew, but the Crew had the high-end talent to make up for that as well. This team did not. So a lot of 1v1 defending that was tilted against them, and you can't give Milanda all the stick for it. It was an organizational issue that they never really fixed all year. So that's the depressing side. Let's go positive to finish this off, Doyle. Why could this be Charlotte's year?
If they get a couple of DPs who are productive, on top, and layer that on top of the structure that is, because like, yeah, they are soft and they're more potential than productivity, but I like Milanda a lot. I thought Privet was good. They went out and they signed a defensive midfielder, which was the spot that they really, really needed to address. So you start stacking ifs, but ifs that I like the chances of turning out well. So, and then the other if is like, okay, you add two high quality DPs on top of it. Well, last year without the high quality DPs, this was a 43 point team. This year with the quality DPs can like approach 50 if, but like, yeah, it's certainly within, you know, within their range.
If it's the big question mark for Minnesota United, if they hire a coach, when will that happen? 41 points last year. That's -7 from the year before. That cost Adrian Heath his job. 11th in the West. They missed the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. Three of those were round one exits, but still, your haiku for Minnesota United. Hurry up and wait. Golden rule of succession. Will Ray be king? Key transfers in the CSO, sporting director. Khalid Al-Ahmad, he has arrived. A head coach has not yet arrived, at least in permanence. We have an interim coach, the second such type of coach for Minnesota United just this offseason. The first was Sean McCauley. He left. And Cameron Knowles, the MLS Next Pro coach, is now the interim head coach. Brought in a center back, Victor Erickson. Got some depth along the back line. And Derek Dodson, Carlos Harvey, Alejandro Braun into the midfield from CONCACAF in different places in their careers. And then a signing from MLS Next Pro from the Revs, Jordan Adebayo-Smith. And that's really it so far. But it was kind of a set team. DeBossi's gone. Minder Garcia's gone. Gregus is gone. Tajiri Shradi and Brent Coleman, Ethan Bristow. But Doyle, I mean, the equation's kind of simple when you have Reynoso. What should Cameron Knowles do? Cameron Knowles, excuse me.
The equation for a haiku is five syllables, seven syllables,
did
five
I not syllables. Hit that? What did I mess up?
5-7-4. Will Ray be king?
You need
to workshop. I mean, you could just add an indefinite article.
That's
right?
True. The haiku counter really buried me on that one. I have to run it back through real quick.
I really thought you were going to use ChatGPT for these.
I should have. I'm really regretting not. I might and claim them as my own in the next show. We'll just wait and see.
So, I honestly don't think that there was anything appreciably wrong with Adrian Heath's approach of rolling the ball out and putting it on Reynoso's foot and letting him be the centerpiece of everything, right? Like, they were the most dependent team in the league upon their number 10, even more so than New England with Carlos Heel. I don't think that's wrong. I think that's where you start from if you're the manager of this team, interim of otherwise. What you then have to do, and what Adrian Heath never quite managed, is layer some other stuff on top of it. And I thought, you know, when they brought in Fragapane a few years ago, he was supposed to be the guy who could do that, and he didn't really. Robin Lud was able to do that, and his absence last year was a big, like, when he got hurt, that's when things really started to go south last year for Minnesota. But I don't see a reason to change from a 4-2-3-1 that is built around your number 10 and your number 9's ability to put the ball in the back of the net. And the hope then is that Bongi on one side can level up and be consistent, and Lud on the other side can be healthy. And then the additions that you've made along the back line can be a little bit better than what you had last year. And if that's the mix that you have for 34 games, this is a playoff team.
How many months till they hire a manager? Dave, our over-under is 2.5 months. You set that over-under. So which side do you sit on?
So 2.5 months puts me at March, April, end of April?
Yeah, end of April.
I'll go over. I think it happens in like May or June.
Interesting.
Why?
I think one, clearly they're in no rush. So that's part of it. And I think you're looking at a sporting director who's coming over from England, who probably wants to interview candidates who will be available at the end of the European seasons, and maybe is looking around at some of the MLS candidates, and they're not really ready to interview and jump back in right now. And so the pool's not there for what they want. And I think once it starts, then what's the rush? Because if they don't get it done before the season starts, you're not going to get a preseason for this coach. It's not going to be the ideal setup. So at that point, find the person that you want and make sure that it's the right move and make sure.
So just like waiting till the end of the European season just broadens the pool of potential candidates you feel.
Yeah, that would be my guess. And
now that makes sense.
Like you just said, there's a decent chance they're competitive. Like if Eriksen hits for this team and Reynoso is there and healthy and available, they're going to be a playoff contender the whole season, whoever coaches them. So if I'm setting this team up and you brought in a sporting director saying, hey, it's okay if you're not here at the start of the year, like all of this feels like long-term planning and resetting the club and changing the direction of the club, not for 2024 or five, six, seven years. Mm. So you want to find the right person in that scenario. And I think this is a team that can tread water until that moment.
The reason they can tread water is because in the short term, they have Emmanuel Reynoso. And they have Teemu Pukki, and Teemu Pukki scored 10 goals last year in very limited time. And Emmanuel Reynoso is one of the best chance creators, attacking players, creative forces that the league has ever seen. Doyle, what's their relationship like? What should people look forward to when watching the two try to create this year for Minnesota?
I mean, Reynoso, other than Messi, Reynoso is the most fun player in the league on the ball. His ability to find little pockets of space, and he never seems to be rushed. And yet he makes guys miss and you can't take the ball off of him. I've compared him in the past to Marco Echeverri, who was the centerpiece of that great DC United dynasty from 96 to 99, like the best player in MLS, the first half dozen years of MLS. Like, he is that level of player, Reynoso is. And if he's healthy and locked in from and focused from moment one, and then in Pukki, this guy's just a professional goal scorer. We've all said on the show a million times, give me a number nine who knows, who understands the patterns of play, understands how to find time and space, understands how, when to drift, when to make the hard near post run, how to make a double move in the box. Pukki does all of it, right? And he's not the athlete he was 5 years ago, I don't think. And he was never probably a good enough athlete to do it consistently in the Premier League, but he was a machine in the Championship. And he's been a machine in international soccer because he just does everything perfectly by the numbers. And if you have a number 10 who's a wizard and a number 9 who does everything perfectly by the numbers, and two wingers who I think balance each other with the way they play, right? Like Bongi always is going to stretch the field and Lloyd is always going to come to the ball and try to create little triangles and little patterns of play in the pockets that free up other guys. It all seems to work so perfectly on paper. They're at or near the top of my, season pass power rankings in terms of watchability heading into this season. Absolutely.
So for what we saw last year, Robin Lud and Reynoso never played a game together because Reynoso hadn't arrived before Lud got hurt. Bongi scored one goal before Lud got hurt and came on the second half of the year. And then you add Pukki in the summer. So like, if you do nothing, this team is going to be better than they were last year, in which on both sides of that Lud injury and Reynoso returning, they competed for a playoff spot, but they did not get one. Like, there's a very real possibility this team is just good. And Robin Ludd's going to be back into a better situation. He's not going to be the guy. He can find the game where he wants to. He can cover ground behind Reynoso when Reynoso goes and floats. He can come inside. Like, all the things Doyle talked about, it fits for all of these players, and it's pretty straightforward. It doesn't have to be super complicated that you need Jesse Marsh and Greg Berhalter coming up with 1,000 ideas to generate chances because the talent's not good enough. Like, it's all pretty much there if it hits at center back and if they're able to stay healthy, which is a caveat for every MLS team.
Yeah, I think left back's the other spot. That's a big question mark for them right now on the depth chart.
They've been playing Rosales out at left back.
Not surprising.
During preseason. Yeah, they, from what certain Loons fans have told me, they're pretty bullish on the kid there. So we'll see.
All right, this is fine meme, the big weakness, the concern, the pitfall. They don't have a coach and the coaching part doesn't work out and that frustrates the Stars, or the Stars get hurt. They lose Reynoso or they lose Pookie. I mean, those are going to be massive dings. And we saw what just losing Robin Lud last year did to the ceiling for this team. Why this could be their year, I think you guys already went over it. From a talent perspective, it's all there. They may not need a coach to stitch together because it kind of fits as is. So make the playoffs and go from there, because nobody's going to want to see Reynoso or Pookie if he's hot at that time of year. All right, New York City FC, 41 points, down 14 points, a big dip for this club. 11th in the East, they missed the playoffs for the first time since 2016. That was their second season. They missed the first season and then 2016, and since then they'd been in the playoffs, including winning the MLS Cup. During that time, they hadn't finished worse than 8th in the Shield standings. That's from 16 to 2022. 2023, they were 22nd, so a big drop-off for this team there. Haiku, when the trunk is strong, the limbs can reach for the stars. Grow tall, young saplings. It's all about the young players in development in that front four. They have a solid spine, a solid trunk. Again, two good center backs, two central midfielders they can rely on, some depth in those positions. Now the question mark is all these signings coming in the offseason. Among them, Agustin Ojeda from Racing Club. He's a winger or a forward. Jovan Mijatovic from Red Star, the 18, 19-year-old Serbian kid who's been blowing it up and was signed, reporting, according to Tom Bogert, which we're taking basically as truth, to NYCFC instead of Man City. Hannes Wolf.
I'm going to interrupt. I think it's Mijatovic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also, Tom told me that Duncan Maguire was on Blackburn, and he's not. So track record's not tight.
That's true. There's a lot of track records we got to re-examine right now. Hannes Wolf, Andres Pereira's in from Philly. And we have a center back, right back from Spartak Subotica, which I'm not going to try after I did so well with our young Serbian friend.
Tanasijevic.
Really? Where are you? I've looked all over. You're more well-read.
What do you want?
You're more well-read.
What do you want, man?
Alfredo Morales doesn't have to look. He's from Connecticut. Yeah. He already knows.
Alfredo Morales, Matias Pellegrini, and Richie Ledesma are on their way out. Man, Nick Cushing, he got what he was asking for last year, Doyle. His players and a higher level of talent in the attack, but before the season started as opposed to during the season. How much pressure is on Nick Cushing to deliver?
A ton, because they did him wrong last year by not building the team at all until really the end of the second transfer window. And then NYCFC played a lot better down the stretch, didn't quite have enough to get over the line. They have not made the same mistake going into this season. I still don't think it's quite a complete team. I still have question marks about Santi Rodriguez as a primary chance creator, but this is just on paper. Like, this is City Football Group using their international scouting network to sign guys who are maybe not accessible to other MLS teams. Mijatovic being, I think, the big one. He's considered a huge prospect in Serbia, and the numbers he's putting up as an 18-year-old were pretty insane. So there are no excuses for Nick Cushing. I would expect it to go back to looking more like what it was under Ronnie Dyla, which was 4-2-3-1, but with positional play, like up around 57% possession, and using the ball to not only sort of dictate the tempo of the game, but just to crack other teams open, man. You use the ball to create chances. It's not just a defensive tactic, though. At times over the past couple of years since Cushing has taken over, it's looked like primarily a defensive tactic. Like, anytime they were on the ball, they actually struggled to create chances. That has got to change. And if it doesn't, then yeah, he'll be in some trouble.
Star Spotlight. Is it Santi, Dave? Or is there somebody else that jumps to mind for you?
I think it's fair to say it's Santi because he's the only one coming back, maybe Talis Magno as well, where there's high expectations and a lot's on his shoulders. I'm super excited about Hannes Wolf. He hasn't come up as much, I think, in a lot of the convos, but like, he's a little bit older than a lot of these other pieces where I don't think maybe they're going to play that much this year. And we've seen for, you know, New York, like, they've brought in players that are more long-term projects and have worked them around and then moved them around the CFG family. But I think he's a difference maker now. all of this to say, I don't think it's one guy. Like, there's not a Maxi Morales in this team. There's not an Emmanuel Reynoso in this team. The issue last year, I think, for Santi Rodriguez wasn't that he's not good enough. It's that there wasn't enough help. So I think it's going to be all of these pieces combined taking a step forward. And I think you'll see Talis Magno now be more comfortable. The game will become easier for him. Now we go back to the player who a year and a half ago looked like he was going to be the next Tati, as in the next big breakout guy who was going to get sold for a big number to Europe right as Tati left to go on loan at Girona. So I think there's a ton of potential in this team. I think it's a little bit more experience, but Krar coming into the year already there is going to be big. But those are the two that I'm looking at, or I guess three. Actually, screw it. Five guys. The whole team.
We didn't even name Burke Risa or Keaton Parks or James
Or Penn. Kevin O'Toole.
Yeah. We have a whole segment on Kevin O'Toole.
Jonathan Shore. Come on.
We're ready for you. Keaton Parks and James Sands. Like, that might be the star of this team. It's what everything is built around, is their ability to control the ball in the midfield and get these young attackers in good spots and then protect them when they inevitably make mistakes, turn the ball over in bad positions. So some veteran guys that still have youth on their side when it comes to their leg. I thought Burke Risa was a good add last year in the summer. Really seemed to compliment Thiago Martins. So, and that was the hallmark of those great Maxi and Kayans and Chanot teams over the years, was just consistency and a high level from the center backs. So, yeah, it's all about that spine. Can it elevate the young players? Speaking of the young players, who starts up top? What do you think? Is it Wolf for sure a starter? Is Magno for sure a starter? Are they sort of banking Ojeda long term? What's the mix, Doyle?
It's something that Nick Cushing is going to have to figure out. The way he has talked about Talis Magno makes me think that either Talis Magno is going to be the MVP or they're going to sell him in the next 15 minutes. Like,
he'll be the MVP of all league, whether it's MLS or not.
Don't compliment me too much when the transfer window is open, all right? Like, chill.
I like the Wolf signing as well, but look, Talis Magno, he was excellent down the stretch last year. I think he has the talent to be one of the best wingers in the league. And then Julian Fernandez on the other side might be considered an even higher tier prospect. And the way NYCFC do business is they want to develop those prospects. So I think those guys will get the first crack at it. But then I think once the European windows open in the summer, I would be surprised if both Talis Magno and Julian Fernandez were still around. So I think this team will be in a state of sort of constant deconstruction and reconstruction over the course of the season, which is, I mean, it's what you sign up for when it's City Football Group owning you.
What's a good over-under here for goals and assists from the front three? Last year, goal scoring was a real issue for them. They were pretty solid.
It's a good question. I honestly think that the better one is what's the over under for primary assists from or total assists from Santi Rodriguez? Because when this team was at its best, it was Maxi Morales in those half spaces pulling the strings. And Maxi, what, had 21 assists one year? Only 9 of them were primary assists. He's like the ultimate pass before the pass guy. And I think that's what Santi Rodriguez needs to add to his game. So if I set the over under for assists total for Santi Rodriguez at 13.5, do you guys go over or under? One, and two, is that good enough?
Total assists. So second assists are counting here, 13.5. Yeah, I think so. I think it is good enough because you would think with Santi, he always adds goals. So if you're looking at a season that's like 8+ goals and 13 assists, I think that's DP production, in my opinion. Is it at the very highest level? Is it Maxi Morales MVP caliber seasons? No, but it's definitely fueling a playoff team and putting the young attackers in better positions, which, by the way, Talis Magno is still just 21. Fernandez is 20. Ojeda is 19. And I think the Serbian kid is 18. So, yeah. And Bakar is only 23. I mean, this is a team of babies. It is. They're so young. Give me the "this is fine" meme. Is it as simple as the young talent can't carry the attacking load, Dave, yeah, or is there something deeper?
No, I mean, you could talk about maybe a weakness at the back of like Matt Fries won the job over from Barraza last year and got the extension, but hasn't shown he's an elite goalkeeper in MLS. And you talked about Burke Risa, but I think there's been question marks over the course of the 2 years with Thiago Martins. Now you bring in another center back. Like if none of those hit, then this team's in trouble, because I agree with you on like, I think Rodriguez will hit that number. I think it'll be enough. But the strength for this group for years has been the spine, and Keaton Parks and James Sands are good enough. I guess the other would be if Parks can't play.
Yeah, which is, that's what I was going to say, right?
Yeah, it's more of a question mark than the average player because of the injury concerns he's had over the years.
Yeah, compartment syndrome, which like hopefully the most recent procedures have taken care of it. But like he's a one-man field tilt machine, right? His ability to play progressive passes into the half spaces, which led to Maxi Morales having a 20 assist season and this team winning MLS Cup. Like Keaton Parks is the best in the league in that, and a big part of the reason why NYCFC weren't an effective possession team last year at turning possession into chances is because Keaton Parks was gone for most of the year. There is a chance that he's the keystone piece, that even if everybody else is good, if Keaton Parks isn't out there, it just doesn't, the machine does not move the way it's supposed to. And then they have to rethink the whole thing tactically.
New York City FC fans know what it looks like when it hits. This team can hit it. So I don't think we have to do predictions or what's going to happen. To me, it's a playoff team. I'm not going to put them win a home game, just given the uncertainty they have up top with youth. But ton of talent. All right, we're getting all caps on our time codes, which means we have to speed it up. FC Dallas time, 46 points, down 7 points year over year. Seventh in the West, 14th in the Shield. Lost to Seattle in round one. We've seen that before. Haiku, take a swing, we said. Dallas went for the fences. Ball's in the air now. Petar Musa is who we're talking about here, a record signing from Benfica, the number nine, the goal scorer that they've been looking for. Also signed in Sally, Omar Gonzalez, and got some other depth in as well. Out, Jose Martinez on the back line, Facundo Quinon out of the midfield. Jader Obreon swapped cities in Texas. He's on to Austin. And Jesus Jimenez, it appears they're going to find a way to get out from underneath that contract that just never did make sense for them. Doyle, can Nico Estevez, with Petar Musa, with Ferreira perhaps in more advantageous positions, befitting his talents, can Nico make this team a little bit more creative, more unpredictable? Can he add attacking production to what was a very organized, defensively sound squad?
I mean, it looks like he's trying to do it in preseason. It's been one of the surprises to me so far is that Dallas look more like a Wilfred Nancy team than they do like a Nico Estevez team. They're playing primarily a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-4-1-2. There's more flow and less rigid structure to when they use the ball. And I'm basing this off of, again, it's preseason, just a couple of a couple of streams and then talking to people around the team. But
in Marbella.
Right. I mean, a nice place to be.
Yeah, for sure. I'd play a 3-4-2.
Used to be in Arizona and in like Celebration, Florida. I think I would take Marbella.
Yeah. So it looks really good and it looks really promising and it's looked really fun in very limited moments so far. But they're doing all the stuff that we saw the Crew do last year. And it's absolutely delightful because the Crew were, I think we all agree, the most fun team in the league to watch last season, and seeing another team that has some intriguing attacking pieces, seeing another team sort of go move in that direction. Hell yeah.
Well, it should be said that Dallas were not one of those teams last year.
No, they were not.
They were not that jumped off the page when you thought about watchability.
Yeah,
just a little bit plodding in possession, a chance of, risk averse at times. So how do you get the best out of Petar Musa, Dave? Like, how would you organize this team, this formation, this ideology around feeding the beast?
I think Doyle talked about it in terms of formation and the expectations, whether it's wingbacks or wingers, you're going to have a guy in Paul Areola that can stretch the field, that can be an option. And I think from what I've seen with Petar Musa's, he's not amazing at anything, and he's good at everything. And so I think you combine him with Jesus Ferreira, who can do a lot of different things really well. And now there's a little bit more question mark with Ferreira because he can pick up more positions and he can float a little bit more and he can find the game in different ways. So I won't be shocked if we see Ferreira making runs past Musa and getting, you know, through balls from him to put pressure on goal. And then at the same time, floating out wide and finding spaces where he's comfortable and creating for Musa, for Areola, for Kamungo as well, who's going to be flexible and can fit in a couple different roles in this setup. And I think if it's five in the back or four in the back, I've been saying for a year, Nkosi Tafari is a winning center back in Major League Soccer. They haven't found him a partner at his level, but I think that's part of playing five. And what we saw from Wilfred Nancy is you can take different attributes from guys as wide center backs than you would as two center backs, because there's less responsibility individually. You have to win less battles. You can start to change the shape a little bit more when you're in possession out of that formation. So it could be a lot of that for this Dallas team. I think it weaponizes Jesus Ferreira at his best, which we've seen over the last few years is elite in Major League Soccer. I think it brings Paul Areola back into what he does at his best, either as a far post crasher, as a goal scorer, or just a field stretcher when Musa drops in, maybe as you play out and Ferreira then is on the other side of the field. I think it does a lot of good for some of the best players in your team to get back to what was promising about the start of the Nico Estevez era.
I'm just imagining Dallas as the crew right now. Pomacle is my Aiden Morris. Yadamendi is my Darlington Nagbe. Jesus Ferreira and Bernie Kamungo are the two attackers playing in behind Musa. You know, Areola on one wing, maybe Farfan on the other.
It's been Dante Seeley.
That would be even better. Like that. Now my dream is absolutely taking off.
Yeah, let me just give a minute on Dante Seeley here. Like 7-8 years ago, I think other than Gio Reyna, Dante Seeley was considered the best prospect in that cohort. You know, better than Joe Scally, better than, you know, the other O2s. And he hasn't been able to, he went to PSV for a few years, had a brief good run with the reserves there, but he hasn't been able to put it together. So far in preseason, he's playing as a left wing back. And he's very two-footed. He's left-footed, but he's very two-footed.
Scored two free kick goals as well.
Yep.
That's sort of a non sequitur to his left back resume, but...
But it tells you what they think of him. And it tells you, like, this is a 21-year-old kid who's never really produced much as a pro. And they're letting him take free kicks in these situations. And he's banging. Like, the talent is there. The two-way focus, the ability to match productivity to potential has never really showed up. It's happening now in preseason. I don't want to get over my skis here. But, like, the talent is still there for this kid to be a significant, significant player at the MLS level and beyond. It's been fun to see. Fingers crossed, we get to see a lot more of it when the games matter starting at the end of this month.
Oh God, I need the games to start. I can't do preseason anymore. I'm done with it. I'm done with it. But I'm never done with Bernie Kamungo. He is our most interesting player to watch. Dave, why would that be?
He's the best story in Major League Soccer. He went from being a refugee in Texas to being an open tryout who paid money, I believe, to try out for North Texas to could be a starter on the U.S. Olympic team in Paris this summer. Could be a difference maker for FC Dallas, could break into the full U.S. national team. It's why soccer is special in this region, because it represents something unique to so many people from different backgrounds who come together and become a part of this society. And he's a blast to watch when he's on. I mean, when he crushed the Galaxy last year to pretty much clinch their playoff spot and still got hurt, but had a hat trick before he did it, you saw everything in his game, ability to stretch the field, finishing confidently with both feet under pressure, understanding when to come in from the center forward position and pick up the ball. So he's a blast to watch. For FC Dallas, there was an expectation that the Weston McKinneys and the Reggie Cannons and the Brian Reynolds will just keep rolling off a conveyor belt. It hasn't been the case. And this is how you sort of cover those holes for a little bit, is either you bring in players who are young and rotate them on as the Dante Seeleys and the next generations find their feet, or you find players in your backyard who maybe you didn't develop, like Bernard Kamungo, and he's every bit as special as all of the pieces I named that have come through the Dallas Academy.
Alan Velasco is still hanging around. Obviously injured, won't be back, we think, so until later in the year.
My assumption is, and if it works out perfectly, is like Ferrer crushes it this year. You sell him. Moose is on a four-year deal. Velasco comes in. He replaces that next year. Right. Moose is still there. Ariola's still there. And then you can just keep rolling on.
Yep. It makes sense from a roster building approach. What they've done makes a ton of sense, provided that the 3-5-2 or 3-4-2-1 or 3-4-1-2, whatever you want to call it, provided it works.
Let's combine all three of the over-under, which is, will they win a playoff series? How's we have it, that this is fine, and why it could be their year, Doyle. Like, what do you see? Go in your mind's eye. Predict this one for me.
The kid, like Kamungo, Sealy, they both level up significantly. Musa hits. Ferreira, playing his natural position, is borderline or even full on best 11. Iaramendi and Pomacall stay healthy. Nkosi Tafare hits defender of the year. Martin Paas is, you know, in the mix for goalkeeper. Like, all of that is on the table. And oh yeah, they end up playing Wilfred Nancy style, beautiful soccer. That, like, that's all on the table for Dallas this year. I don't think it's all going to hit, but I desperately want it to. It would be a great story. It'd be a lot of fun to see. And if it does, this is a team that, you know, 60 points is within reach. I think more likely, though, that this is a team 48 to 50 points, somewhere in there.
All right. That's it. I'm sorry to DC and Colorado supporters out there. We've had a cut for time. This is our age-old issue. In the interest of finishing this show, Dave, I'd like
to... Do you want to do 10 more minutes on Ariel Graziani and Sergio McDonald?
I was just going to get Dave's thoughts on the Knicks transfer deadline day here.
We are in mid-season form in preseason. We could contend in CONCACAF right now.
It's been a good day for Knicks fans, depending on who you ask.
All right. To be honest, I haven't heard the last hour and 10 minutes of this show because I've been texting all my Knicks fans and my dad, so... Let me know if it was good as well on social if you end up listening this far.
That's why he's here. All right, we'll do Colorado and DC on the next show with a big batch of previews for you. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week. Adios.